It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. A place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. We'll use a few minutes to center ourselves. We may use the time to light candles of memory and hope, or just sit quietly remembering who you are and why you are here. Let us give thanks for mothers, whether they gave birth to children or adopted them, for mothers who have lost a child through miscarriage, abortion, adoption, or death, and remember the loss. For those who have never had children but who miss being mothers and who are mothers in their hearts, who express their nurture in other ways. For our own mothers and theirs, as far back as memory can carry us. And for all who have lost their mothers and feel the loss. It is Mother's Day. Let us remember all the varieties of mothers in all of our lives in deep gratitude and prayer. Amen. I've decided to try and do it by backing off quite a ways and looking for some large patterns in a style that will hopefully make this not a lecture, but a sermon. Let's see if it works. We've come a long way since the Middle Ages, but we're only halfway home. If you want a picture of people living in an integrated world where everything was really interconnected, go back 1,000 years. It was a very small world then. 99% of the people lived and died within 2 or 3 miles of the place where they were born. They worked on the same farm, served the same prince or his successor, drank at the same taverns their whole life. There was only one religion. They attended the same church where they were baptized, married, and buried. Many had just one or two priests in a whole lifetime. Virtually everyone except the priests was illiterate, and the invention of the printing press was 4.5 centuries in the future. So there weren't book discussion groups where intellectuals gathered to ponder disturbing ideas. The people didn't think about whether the world was flat or spherical, because either way, what difference would it make? They didn't think about solar systems, galaxies, the speed of light, or the ozone layer, because those thoughts hadn't been invented yet. They didn't think much about abstract concepts either, like knowledge or wisdom, though medieval theologians did. And what medieval theologians thought about knowledge and wisdom is still instructive for us today. Knowledge was called scientia in Latin. It's the word from which we later got our word science, meaning knowledge. Wisdom was called sapientia. It's nowhere near as famous today as science. They knew that knowledge made you certain, and that it could make you smug if you had too little of it. Wisdom, on the other hand, they thought could make you whole, could help you integrate what you knew and who you were into a character who might live happily and well and be a blessing to yourself and others. So the only knowledge they thought really mattered was the kind of knowledge that might lead to wisdom. Knowledge made them certain. Wisdom made them whole. It was a wonderful distinction that would play a much bigger role after that medieval world started falling apart which it did very soon. In the 12th and 13th centuries, it started falling apart. By the 16th century, there was no longer just one religion. The church had split. There were Lutherans, Calvinists, Reformed preachers, Mennonites, and by the end of the 16th century, there were Unitarians as well. Now, your religious certainty extended only as far as the walls of your church and the members of your community. The people in the church across the street were equally certain, but about different things. Books were being printed. People were reading them and getting all sorts of new ideas about God, life, the world, and everything. And in the infant sciences, the disciplines arising to seek knowledge, Copernicus and Galileo were shattering the certainty about the earth, the universe, and our place in it. They said the earth moved. What a crazy idea. It certainly didn't seem like it moved. You could live a whole life and never actually feel the earth turning. But these early scientists said it moved because they had knowledge of things that didn't come from the concerns of everyday living, but from an intellectual curiosity that had been abstracted from the questions of everyday living. It was an early sign that knowledge was becoming unhooked from wisdom. Of course, the leaders of every church thought that what was taught in all the other churches was also knowledge that was unhooked from wisdom. And they yearned for a simple world again, one that fit within the boundaries of their understanding. It's a strange idea, wanting a world no bigger than our understanding. It's like carrying around one bucket of ocean water and pretending it's the ocean. But it was all they could carry. And there, they're not so different from us today. Even today, I'm not sure that any of us is carrying more than a few bucketfuls of the universe's truths. Some of this new knowledge threatened so many old certainties, it was dangerous to believe it. Catholics and Protestants didn't agree on most sacraments. Catholics had 7. The Protestants had eliminated all but 2, communion and baptism. But they all agreed that infants must be baptized or they would go to hell. Then in the middle of the 16th century, the Mennonites said that infant baptism wasn't even mentioned in the Bible. There's no reason at all to exalt it. The only baptism mentioned in the Bible was a baptism of adults, a baptism for adults to proclaim their beliefs. And so the Mennonites said adults had to be baptized again. Now that sounds pretty ho-hum today, maybe boring. But Catholics, Lutherans, Calvinists, and all the rest thought it was a capital crime. They hunted down Mennonites everywhere and they killed them for being certain about the wrong things. Almost the whole first generation of Mennonites were wiped out by the other Christians whose certainties lay in a different area. Religious warfare was breaking out all over. It wasn't safe to be sure unless your certainties agreed with the church. When others could shrug off the beliefs that you thought were necessary to live by, and yet they lived quite happily without them, it was a sign that maybe your own beliefs weren't grounded in truth after all, but maybe only in old habits and small visions. And few people can live with that fear. One of the times that fear boiled over, one of the famous, awful times, was in August of 1572 in what are called the St. Bartholomew's Day massacres, where French Catholics tried to provide the final solution to the Protestant problem by killing an estimated 30,000 of them in one day
and 100,000 of them in 1 week. And this bloody, barbaric state of affairs, as odd as it seems, was the manger in which our modern sciences were born. It's one of the most amazing stories in Western history. In the early 1600s, a young genius named Descartes, who believed he was saving Western civilization, invented a new definition of knowledge to make it safe from the churches by separating it from the kinds of knowledge the churches cared about. Religion cared mostly about personal and subjective knowledge. Who are we? How should we live? What's the purpose of life? That sort of stuff. Descartes' new kind of knowledge was much more restricted. It excluded all personal and subjective questions about life's meaning and purpose. Those, he thought, would be answered by the Catholic Church, his church. For these new fields seeking knowledge, he defined a new territory, which included only impersonal, objective, factual things. Not how to live, but how to understand things like numbers, rocks, trees, bridges, and the laws of nature. Knowledge, in other words, was now separated officially from wisdom. And it was exalted in its own right as scientia, science. That's why to this day, the only time that scientists get attacked by churches is when their knowledge has implications for who we are and how we're supposed to live. Evolution, birth control, cloning. To put it another way, Descartes succeeded so well that he helped create new problems we still haven't solved. Knowledge and wisdom have been so successfully separated that today we struggle with how to forge a new synthesis of sciences and religions, facts and values, objective truths and their meaning or their use in real human lives. That's what I meant when I said we've come a long way from the Middle Ages, but we're only halfway home. Last week, Kathy Harrington here used a wonderful phrase from Emily Dickinson that I want to use again and again. Our souls, Dickinson said, must stand ajar if we are to let the world in. What a wonderful image. Descartes taught us to seek objective certainty rather than personal wholeness. And nearly all of our sciences have followed him. Our sciences have succeeded spectacularly within this narrower and more impersonal definition of a knowledge that's been separated from questions of who we are and what our life is to mean. How to bring our heads and hearts together in an integrated life we can live with hope and trust. The sciences have now defined for all of us what count as facts, what counts as knowledge and truth. And their success, ironically, undermined and discredited most of the claims of religion. This would have broken Descartes' heart, even though he was the one who defined the new kind of knowledge that left the concerns of our heart out. Many people have now left the religions of their childhood because they became bored or insulted with teachings that they could not believe because they didn't believe they were scientifically true. Many of those people feel so deeply betrayed it will be years, if ever, before they'll be willing to take something called religion seriously again. We have some of those people in this room. And we have some here who have partners who they love, who won't come here, because after all, this is a church, and they think churches lie. Some studies have been saying for more than 60 years that over 40% of Americans attend church regularly. Other studies that don't get as much publicity say those numbers are faked, and the real number is more like 20%, one in five. This means that somewhere between 60 and 80% of Americans don't think that what goes on in churches is worth getting out of bed for. So religion, which was supposed to be speaking about who we are and how we should live to make our lives more fulfilling, stammers. Because while it has some wisdom hidden in its myths and its stories, religion can't do knowledge as well as the sciences, so we don't trust it. Our doors are shut. But while sciences have knowledge, they're not about finding wisdom. It's not their job. They can say the earth is 4 or 5 billion years old. They can say we evolved over millions of years, that there's neither a heaven above the sky nor a hell below the ground. But sciences can't tell us how or why that needs to matter to us. What would make any of that important or necessary knowledge in the way you actually live your life? Most people in history lived their whole lives never knowing any of it. And they had happy lives. If someone lives well, believing they have a guardian angel or that a god or a goddess is watching over them and it dispels their fears, what difference could it make whether it's true? Is it a contest? Is there a prize? Scientific knowledge may make us smug, but smugness isn't what we're really after, is it? Aren't we after different things that aren't very scientific at all? Aren't we after questions like, what should I serve with my life? How do I balance greed and fairness? How do I live so I'll be proud that I lived that way? Those aren't scientific questions. And others, like, what do I owe to myself, to those I love, to my community, to the future, to history? What are the moral responsibilities of power? And what does survive after I've gone of all the things that I loved? Understand, I'm not against sciences. Good sciences can save us from bad religion. No religious teachings should be protected from any and all critical scientific question. We seek a peace that passes understanding, not bypasses it. But good religion can save us from bad science. No scientific assertion should ever be protected against questions like, so what? Who cares? Why does this matter to my life? Is it a contest? Are there prizes? Is this exam going to be graded? So what? There's such a thing as true, but irrelevant, and true, but trivial. The attitude of certainty that we've been trained to seek for almost 400 years has become, ironically, the enemy of both honest science and honest religion. It's not that all certainty is bad. Only that certainty which is about half-truths is bad, about facts divorced from meanings, data unhooked from values. One example for this Mother's Day is the recent attempt by some groups in Texas to prevent gay and lesbian couples from adopting children. These people are certain that parents must mean always and only one of each sex, that it's about the sex of the people playing the roles of parents rather than the roles they're playing, which means that bad parents of mixed sex would be better than good parents of the same sex. There's not a chance of that. It's too ignorant to be good science. For nature's God created many species in which both homosexuality and bisexuality are found. Go to a good zoo and watch the bonobo monkeys for a few hours. It's too ignorant to be good science. And it's too hateful to be good religion. It's the role of mothering and fathering that defines mothers and fathers, not what sex they happened to be born. But we can't learn it when certainty has slammed our minds shut or slammed our hearts and our souls shut. We cannot learn either truth or love with our minds and our hearts slammed shut. Unless we want to dwell in yesterday's ignorance and biases, both our minds and our souls must be left ajar. Now, you may wonder, can we be certain of this? And the answer is yes. Because that's the one kind of certainty that can get us closer to good science, to good religion, and to the kind of knowledge that leads to wisdom. It is the certainty that we cannot hold the ocean in our buckets, cannot restrict life to the horizons of our own understanding, cannot restrict love or parenting to our own habits. That's what we can always be certain of. That there is more. That there is always more. More than we know, more than we dare to hope. There is more. There's always more.